Here we go. Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter. Today I'm speaking with Brian Perry. He is the publisher of a number of newsletters, ranging from income investing to more active trading. You can find it, all his newsletters, at brianperryinvesting.com. Brian, welcome.
Thank you, Jack. Very good to be with you today, and looking forward to seeing how we can provide some good ideas to your audience.
Excellent. So let's maybe you can give us just a quick overview of the publications that you put out now and sort of their investment philosophies and strategies.
Sure. At BrianPerryInvesting.com, we have five different advisories going on there. Jack, the flagship service, which is in its 13th year now, is Cash Machine, which is a high-yield advisory service which will recommend different classes of securities, different asset classes, of which drill down and with a lot of due diligence to ferret out particular stock recommendations, or they could be master limited partnerships, they could be business development companies, it could be REITs, it could be just convertible securities, preferred securities, corporate bonds, closed-end funds, option income funds, a variety of things to choose from. It's the high-yield market's just not corporate debt anymore. It's a buffet table of a lot of different things to choose from. Very crowded, but also there's some good ideas out there. But from my three decades at the business here of looking for what I would call uncanny types of yield, this portfolio that I manage from an advisor standpoint, it consists of around 20 to 22 different holdings, and that gives people a nice diversified portfolio in various different asset classes, hopefully that are not non-correlating, so that it's a smooth ride, if you will, while people can bring in an income stream. We have three portfolios there, Jack. That one is a safe haven portfolio where I'm looking for yields to pay between 4 to 6%, and a conservative high yield portfolio which pays yields of between 6 and 9%, and then the aggressive high yield portfolio which pays yields north of 10%. So together, if people buy all the securities in one basket, they're going to get a yield of roughly about 9% on a blended basis, and that's more than three times what the 10-year bond is paying on the treasury side. High-yield securities tend to trade more along the lines of the stock market as opposed to the bond market. So they do move around, and it's important that people know it's a fluid portfolio, not a static portfolio. And that's really my job is to, as a student of sector rotation, is to look at where money flows are, where it looks like a good forward strength in particular sectors of the economy are going to lie, and whether it's a domestic or international, bringing into account things like currency, interest rates, commodity risk, government regulation risk, technological risk, whether it's consumer related or industrial related, different things that all matter from a standpoint of taking a top-down approach, and then finding the securities that make sense. And so that's what drives the thinking behind Cash Machine, and I'm very happy to say that it's been a solid performing advisory for many, many years, and a lot of people live on this particular model for their pension income because they simply, after you adjust for taxes and the cost of living and a lot of services that retired people have, 2 to 3 or 4% just doesn't get it done, and so therefore, without bleeding their nest egg dry. So many times I get in these interviews and teleforums and trade shows, people are excited to how can I, buy a high-yield portfolio without using a lot of smoke and mirrors and leverage and margin and, very high-risk securities to do that with. So this has been a good formula for many years, and it stood the test of time and the test of market corrections.
Okay. So typically you hold rough about 20 positions.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Currently, we have 22 on board.
Okay, and
from time to time, Jack, I will recommend a market hedge. For instance, if it looks like volatility is really low, and the market's made a big move like we've seen recently. And just this week, I recommended putting on a market hedge, against the S&P 500 in the event that we, that things decide to, go back and fail and retest. And so that's important, too, is to manage risk using, certain tools out there that are available.
And I guess, you try to keep things as non-correlated as possible with these 22 different positions.
Right.
Okay. I want to, a little bit later we can get into, more of your tech stocks and more active trading, but let's sort of focus on these income stocks right now. Let's kind of start with, the big picture of, your outlook, for the economy, the stock market, and how that's going to, affect, income yielding stocks for 2019.
Sure. You do have a dichotomy here because we've got a pretty good labor market going on. We've seen the recent figures are pretty good for jobs and for wages. We're actually seeing wages growing at around 3% annually. And that may stay, pretty consistent through 2019 because minimum wages are coming up this year by mandate. So that looks still like the labor market's going to be pretty tight going forward. We have, very good consumer spending at the level right now because jobs are fairly firm. People are feeling confident about their next paycheck for those that are, gainfully employed. And at the same time, we have this, other thing going on here, and that's a global slowdown in Europe and a better part of Asia and certainly parts of Latin America. So there's currency crises around the world in some of these smaller emerging markets. You've got a credit bubble possibly in Italy. You certainly have a large bank in Germany, Deutsche Bank, their biggest bank, is really in financial straits that actually might be nationalized sometime this year. China's most recent data definitely verifies that this trade skirmish is taking a hit on their economy. Both their import and export numbers were negative for December. And, we never know whether China's numbers are real or not because the government puts them out, and as a communist government, we just don't know if they can be verified and validated. So the best we can do is to see other things like the Shanghai Index, which is trading near its, three-year low, as well as the Chinese yuan, which has rallied recently, but is still not the currency of choice by most institutions over in the PAC rim. So I still think that this trade war may persist, and if so, then depending on whether there's a deal out here in the works, it's hard to say because the Chinese want to buy a lot of stuff from us in order to have us not play hardball on the structural issues. And that seems to be, and President Trump's kind of in a corner here. He's got a government shutdown going on, which is going to extend itself further. And he's, politically a little bit handicapped here now that the House has been turned over to the Democrats. So, I know that he loves to make a deal, but, making the right deal for the long term is just as important as trying to satisfy Wall Street. Wall Street will cheer any deal, but from a long-term structural standpoint, my opinion is that they should hold the Chinese to the fire because it's going to be a rare opportunity that the Chinese are leveraged 300% of GDP, are seeing their economy contract, and are in a position where we've got them in a position to have to consider coming into the first world in a responsible manner and being an accountable neighbor. We may never get this chance again. So that's my political view on that, and I'm hoping that that comes to pass. And I think the market would cheer much further if we could get a hard deal like that as opposed to a soft deal. But, if it comes to pass where these trades, these tariffs kick in on March 1st at 25% from 10%, this market's not going to like that. So I think we're going to see more volatility going forward, and it's going to be tough for the market to break out of this range at the meantime, because also, you know, earnings are expected to have lower comps going forward from year-over-year comp comparisons. FactSet has reduced their earnings forecast for the fourth quarter, you know, by a pretty good amount. S&P 500 earnings are expected to, you know, come in around $11.50 when you measure that against the SPY, the Spider SPY. And that estimate was over $16 back at the end of September. So that's come down 28% just in the quarter.
It's a big drop.
And we still, yeah. And so people are expecting slower top line, and not so much on the top line, but definitely lower on the earnings side. I see what's most important, Jack, is whether or not the top line growth still comes in at, you know, 6 to 7%. That's still going to be fairly bullish for the market. Earnings, you can manufacture earnings, you know, nine ways to Sunday. Stock buybacks are part of that. Any way you want to, you know, use one-offs and write-offs and kitchen sink type financials. But what it seems to be is the market's trading at around 14 times earnings right now, call it 14 to 15, which is historically a good valuation. And from there, with yields have come down on treasuries, the dollar's pulled back considerably off the highs, but that's all bullish for multinationals. Should be good for spending on homes and large ticket items because rates have come down about 50 basis points from the recent high, from 3.3 to 2.7 on the 10-year. The Fed has, basically put forward a position that they're willing to wait and see, you know, what the data says. And the markets, you know, we've come at this V bottom that we've seen here for the last 3 weeks, you know, from the December 24th lows up to where we are now, has been impressive. Although I venture to wonder, because there's not a whole lot of other super attractive places around the world to invest, that, you know, this is a follow through from, you know, some short covering as well as people trying to, there's a lot of momentum investing out there, a lot of high speed trading. So we'll see, because, you know, earnings season is upon us. And even though there's been some blow ups out there, whether it's been Apple, you know, really warned of profit warning, FedEx had a bad profit warning, Sherwin-Williams and Goodyear Tire, for instance, and those stocks got hurt hard. They got hit hard. And yet the market still wants to reward, generally speaking, you know, big cap tech, and we'll talk about that further, but, and other things like healthcare and big pharma and other parts of the economy, which seems to be more immune to the global growth slowdown that's affecting more of the cyclical industries. So by and large, the market is on pretty good footing. Technically, I think we're going to go back and forth quite a bit, and I think we're going to be in a wide range, call it probably a 200-point range for the S&P 500 for the foreseeable future until some of these other things clear up and become more well-defined. But we got a couple check marks off there. You know, you got the Fed, which is more accommodative, and you've also got a bond market, which has now rallied and brought yields back down, and you've also got the dollar, which was really becoming a threat to, you know, currency, forex headwinds, and profitability, has pulled back as well. So we've got three of those items that look pretty good. You still have, you know, these other items that I spoke of that are still out there, and it's going to keep the market, basically unable to break out to new highs. But still, I don't think we're going to see the market break down from a valuation standpoint, because 14 times earnings or so thereabouts is pretty good.
So is this a good place for income investors to be in right now?
It really is, I think, because I think the Fed is near the end of their tightening cycle. And I think, you know, we may see maybe one, possibly two more rate hikes over the next year and a half. But right in here, I think that, you know, it's a good opportunity to stick with, income assets that are U.S. focused and not too heavily weighted in the energy sector, but into where strong pockets of business are, and that would certainly be in those industries I noted, as well as the consumer discretionary. Things also like services for, you know, high tech services. It could be like data centers, for instance, or, you know, cell towers and things like this, where we're, the usage of cell phone and streaming and mobile commerce and all that is accelerating fast. So we want to be in those mega themes, but to find income assets that play into those themes is important. That's what I do. I also like to invest alongside, you know, smart money, a lot smarter than me, obviously, because that's, you know, people like Carl Icahn. You know, I own Icahn Enterprises. IEP is a symbol. And, you know, he's a brilliant investor, one of the most brilliant of our time. He's got fantastic assets within his company. And he owns 92% of his own stock, you know, and the stock trades at an 11% yield. I find it to be compelling. And so things like that.
So
really,
let's, you know, yeah. We start talking about Icahn Enterprise. But so let's kind of get into some of your current, you know, favorite positions.
Yeah.
So let's kind of get a little bit more into, what is it? IEP is the symbol, right?
Right. Correct.
So, so what do you like about this stock right now?
Well, you know, Carl is, he's a deal maker, and he, and a you know, heavy-duty activist. So he tries to not only to find distressed assets, but also change things up at companies where he thinks that they're not doing a good job of managing, realizing value for the shareholder. They own CVR Energy, which is about the fourth or fifth largest refinery in America. You know, so from gasoline, jet fuel, diesel, lubricants, solvents, you name it. It's a fantastic refinery, and that business is there's always good demand there for the most part for what they call refined products. They don't have nearly the same kind of risk as trying to play the oil market or the natural gas market from an input price pan, because they'll just basically make what they have to make and then just, you know, charge a higher price for it. It's just a matter of whether or not the demand for jet fuel, gasoline, lubricants, and solvents is consistently, you know, on the uptick. And in an economy that's moving forward, even at a 2% growth rate, refiners typically do pretty well. And that's a big holding of his. He's also heavy into the auto parts and auto services types of businesses. He owns Pep Boys, for instance, and Amco Transmission, 100% of those, a federal mogul. So the auto parts business is quite good to him. He's a big player in real estate. So he just sold the Tropicana Hotel and those properties off to Eldorado Resorts. He's now taking a stake in Caesars Entertainment. The stock is down around 6 or 7, maybe $8, but it was as high as 13 recently. So he tends to go in and take big positions here. He's taken an enormous position in Cheniere Energy, which is the only, at this point in time, the only exporter of liquefied natural gas out of Texas to foreign markets, whether it's China, India, Indonesia, Japan, Thailand, places like Korea, Brazil. And so there's, you know, that's been a very strong performing story. The LNG story around the world is a global secular trend, replacing coal and nuclear as the leading fossil fuel for import. And Europe is trying to get off the Russian gas pipeline as much because of a coercive geopolitical pressure. And so therefore the LNG markets over there are opening up. So I like the fact that Icahn recognizes these things. And he's also into, things like home decor. You know, he's got, they've got a lot of, in that business there where, you know, people accessorize their homes. He's got interest in that. And by and large, then, you know, his investment portfolio is made up of a lot of things that are leveraged to the domestic U.S. economy. And I think that's really what I like about it. He just raised his dividend last year. Now it pays out a 7% yield. It was paying about $5 yield. Now it's a $7 annual payout.
And the stock looks like
it's 66.5. Yeah,
66.5. I'm looking at the chart. It had a really strong bounce from that December bottom, like a real V.
Right. Well, yeah, it was up around almost 80, and then it went down to 50. It moves around a lot because it's thin. You know, bear in mind that Icahn owns, you know, most of the stock, so it can get moved around quite a bit. So if it fall, I'm telling, if we get into the shot below 65 or $60 and down in there, if the market does retest, I think it'd be really a great buy, because then you're getting around a 13% yield. And that's a money good dividend. I mean, he well earns that dividend. And he pays himself. Think about what he's doing here.
Right.
You know, he's the biggest dividend holder in the, and it's a limited partnership. So there's a lot of pass through tax advantages he's getting from this. So I find that to be an exciting story. And Carl is a brilliant guy with a very deep bench, you know, at Icahn.
This is what I want to ask you about. I mean, Carl, is he about 80 now? I mean, what's the succession plan?
He's
in that Buffett
80.
Category.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He's about 80 years old, and again, he's not going to live forever like Buffett, you know. So you wonder what's going to happen. His team behind him is I imagine they would just probably divest the company. And if so, then the sum of the parts is considerably bigger than the whole. That's the other side, too. And that's how I think a lot of people feel about Berkshire Hathaway. If they ever broke it up, oh, gosh, you know, I mean, it would be a real payday there. So, Icahn, you know, I mean, he's in rail cars. He's got a number of things, a lot of hotel rooms, you know, over 6,000 hotel rooms he controls now. And so I'm just food packaging is another area. That's steady business. So again, I want to be. He's a good. It's just a nice conglomerate. It gives us a chance to be in where there's a lot of brain power, and certainly a lot of earning power, and some tremendous yield right now. So I think the stock can make its way back toward $80 in a decent market. So from here, that's pretty good. That's around 14 points higher than where it trades, and you know, you're still going to get a very nice yield along the way.
So it's interesting, because it's kind of, I guess, you know, it's a proxy for the U.S. economy, but from a value investor standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Over, I think so.
With a yield.
With a huge yield. I mean, it's the market cap's $12.4 billion, and you know, of that 12.4, $11 billion of it is Carl's. He's got the most to gain and the most to lose, and I like that proposition in itself. So I think he's going to protect himself and at the same time protect the shareholder. Trades around 13 times earnings. So I think it's good all the way around for people that are just saying, you know, get me something where I can get paid really well and be in a core set of assets with a smart management team.
So let's kind of get into your top three. So you like Icahn Enterprise. What other two of your current favorites do you want to mention?
Well, as long as we're talking about smart guys in the room, let's talk about Blackstone Group. You know, Stephen Schwartz is arguably the smartest guy in the private equity business around the world. Symbol BX, Blackstone Group. It's the largest private equity firm by a wide margin. And, you know, they've got their hand in a lot of global different things, but mainly they buy a lot of distressed things. They'll buy energy when it's distressed. They're buying real estate when it's distressed. They're big distressed players. And they have these massive funds that they bring out that, you know, people trust, you know, Stephen Schwartz and his team to, you know, to provide, you know, great, you know, timing in buying into distressed assets. Again, this is also a limited partnership. So, whatever the company makes, they're passing through for the most part in the form of distributions, tax-free distributions to those shareholders. It's about, market cap is much bigger. This is about a $38.5 billion market cap for Blackstone Group. And BX is paying a yield of around 8% right now, Jack. It's a pretty nice yield, about a $2.5 dividend yield here. That's going to move around. It's not fixed, okay, like Icahn. This is going to be a function of how they do quarter to quarter. So I find it to be, if I'm going to be in international markets, I kind of want to have Stephen Schwartz and his team picking and choosing where to invest that, whether it's distressed property in Europe or Asia or, you know, energy in certain parts of the world, airports, whatever they're doing. So I'm impressed with their operation. It's been a good performer for us over the years, and again, this is usually where people didn't have access to private equity that were the retail Main Street investor before. The only other ones that truly trade out there are Carlyle Group and Colbert Kravis and Oak Tree Capital for the most part, and also Apollo Group. So those are the four big private equity firms, and you had to have big boy money, in order to have an account or to be invited as an investor at Blackstone or any of these other groups before they went public. So with the click of a mouse, we can be shareholders in what used to be reserved for the super rich, and I think that's a wonderful avenue for people that, again, are looking for top tier management where it's one of the hardest jobs in the world to get, is at some of these firms. All these brilliant college grads that come out of these Ivy League business schools would give their right arm to work for these companies and the right jobs. So I'm the talent pool is just tremendous there, and the financials are solid, and the earning power of what they do is great, and the fact that they're publicly traded, is a nice way to be a part of a smart pool of money that's making smart investments, that's paying out really a lucrative dividend yield. It's to be part of you can look at bank stocks, which have been down for the most part, and they're getting a little bit of a pop here off the lows, but they pay less than 3% yields. You can look at the fintech companies, which the Visa, MasterCards, which have been wonderful companies, and I own those, but they don't pay much of a yield. So for income investors that are looking for a good financial with a yield, then Blackstone Group is right in the sweet spot.
And what's your target for the stock?
I think Blackstone can trade to 45. It's currently trading at 32 and change. I think it can trade to 45 over the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay, so there's a little bit of upside here.
Yeah.
Let's go for one more.
Okay. In looking at the something for people that want to say, Brian, it's all just give me something that's straightforward. Okay. In terms of my favorites, I'd say there's Store Capital looks really good right now also, STOR.
Okay.
And that's a real estate investment trust that is, I would call it Amazon-proof, because a lot of the things that they do are, you still can't see the doctor, through an Amazon order, and things like that. So they have a lot of interest in clinics and properties that, we've got to get your car fixed and things like that. They make a lot of loans out to people in these types of what I would call Amazon-proof businesses. It's one that pays around 4.5%. It's a very conservative stock. Warren Buffett is a big owner of the stock, so Berkshire Hathaway has a big position in the stock, and that helps lend some credibility to it. And it gives me something where people say, I just want to get, at least better than the bond, get some growth out of it and some dividend growth, and be in brick and mortar real estate in the U.S. without international exposure, then I find that Store Capital is probably the best place that I can find for people that just really want to sleep well at night. And I talk to a lot of retired people in their 70s and 80s. They want to have some equity exposure, but they need yield, and they really don't want to have a lot of volatility. They just don't want to go through that, especially what we saw back in for the last 3 months of the year. So for folks out there that are saying, I just want to have a smooth ride and something where, I'm in U.S. properties, and I've got a proven management team that has had a fantastic track record of raising dividends, then this is the place to be. So it's one that I like quite a bit.
So they have retail properties, but they're not. But they're more like service type businesses that they're.
They're a big lender to a lot of different landlords. Okay, so they lend quite a bit to again, to those types of whether it's, I would call them, standalone medical clinics, for instance, strip malls that have stores that, where you go to get, food or get your tires changed or get a haircut or take the dog to get clipped, those types of things that are not online. And they also do quite a bit with lending to medical facilities, things like that, that are, large scale. So they're big lenders of capital, but they're lenders of capital to, and they own 2,200 properties. Don't get me wrong; they're a big owner of a lot of these properties, but they're also a big lender to other people doing the same thing. Hmm. Standalone Walgreens, things like that.
Okay.
So people that have a lot of franchised, if they need to franchise a McDonald's or something, that they'll come to Stork Capital to secure finance.
I see.
Things like that. I like the fact that they're in all, what I would call the everyday businesses services kind of needs of most American consumers. These are kind of single tenant type, real estate loans and all that they make, but they're not geared to, again, the big time shopping malls, where you've got a lot of closures and all that, or just a lot of lower sales because Amazon's, eating their lunch at Macy's or whatever,
Interesting. And what's your target for the stock for STR?
Well, yeah, I think the stock trades around, it just came off, a very nice buy point at around 27.5. It currently trades around 29.5. I think it can make its way toward 35 over the course of the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay, so there's a little bit of upside. So do you like it because it's relatively stable and it's relatively conservative yield? Is that the draw?
Yeah. The draw is this, if I'm wrong about the market outlook, and let's say for instance, Jack, that there is no deal come March 2nd, the trade and it kicks in. And let's just say that Europe's slow growth, which has been really contracting in the fourth quarter, gets worse. And let's say that the Mueller investigation turns up, some stuff that that basically muzzles Trump from doing anything. And let's say that the government shutdown goes into the fourth or fifth month. And let's say that, any number of things could take place and there's no infrastructure bill, okay? And so let's say that the Fed gets, they raise interest rates again, against a market that really doesn't want to see that happen. So any number of those types of things could pull this market right back to 2350 on the S&P. We're currently pushing up at 2600, just above that right now. And so a retest of the lows, this particular stock, for instance, was at the low was 27.5. I can stand 2 points of pain all day long. What a lot of people can't stand is to watch, their other stocks. And for instance, like MasterCard was 220 and it dropped down to, 180. Great company, but, we've seen what happened with Netflix. Went to 250, now it's 350. All the FANG stocks, things like that. Well, Amazon was, pushing 2,000 now and it went to 1,500, now it's 1,675. Apple is busted. I think that stock's not coming out of the woods for a while. I'm looking for stocks that have ballast properties also, so that if it looks like we've got to really tighten it down because, all the stars don't line up going forward for the balance of the year, that we can have securities that are somewhat weatherproof, in the face of what could be a much more difficult market going forward, assuming that that all the things I'm talking about don't line up well.
So. Interesting. So how do you select your stock? Like what's the investment philosophy for these income stocks?
Well, I do try to I have the whole set of rules that I basically go work off of here, and that I've developed over time. I want to be in companies that have a commitment to a rising dividend policy. They've got a proven track record. stability of their business is you know, recognizable. They have a high return on equity. They've got an attractive current payout ratio. They've got just, you know, good annual dividend growth, not just penny here and penny there, which a lot of companies try to say, we raise our dividend for 20 years, but it's nominal. You know, I want to see companies that raise their dividends, you know, 5 to 10% a year. The payout ratio has got to be prudent. You know, attractive is one thing, but a lot of companies will push that so they don't keep enough money to grow the business organically. I want to have yields that are, you know, targeting well above the inflation rate, there really is some take-home pay there. Stock buybacks are they add value, but they're not important to me as much because I'd just rather see the company pay that out in dividends instead of buying back their stock personally.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that the balance sheet is adverse, you know, risk adverse, that they haven't over-leveraged themselves too much. Leverage is okay in a lower interest rate market, but now that short-term borrowing rate has come up considerably off of 0 to 2.25, that starts to really eat into margins depending on what kind of business you're in. So I want to be careful there. I want to respect sector rotation. I don't want to swim against the tide. You know, I want to follow the money. And so when money's coming out of mortgage REITs for whatever reason, because it suspects interest rates are going higher, I don't want to be the only guy holding, handling mortgage or something like that, you know, saying that the market's wrong. You don't want to argue with the market. You don't want to fight the tape. And lastly, I want to hopefully be in some of these securities where there's a dividend reinvestment program so that if people don't need the income, you know, they can really, compound their earnings here. I mean, given if you'd put $100,000 in, a 3% stock back in 2006, for instance, and you know the S&P grew at an average rate of 8.75% per year since then for that next 10 years. That same $100,000 that was that grew it would have given you basically, I did this math here a while back here, but it would have given you, you would have averaged about 8.75% from the S&P 500, whereas had you put it in and reinvested your money, you would have had an average annual rate of around 15%. So not quite a double on that, but that just shows you the power of compounding if you had, just reinvested all your dividends. And so as Albert Einstein was saying,
right, compound interest.
Compound interest, eighth wonder of the world, you know, so... And it's fascinating how that when I've seen some accounts that have reinvested their monies over the years, the incredible leverage that generates after about 10 years.
Interesting. Now let's how often do you what's kind of the turnover in this income portfolio? You have 22 stocks. Like, what's the typical turnover annually?
I try to hold everything for a year and a day for tax purposes. I want to try to get, long-term capital gains with each idea. So the average holding period is typically 2 to 3 years. Some have had longer, but usually 2 to 3 years. You're trying to catch, a cycle. And a lot's going to happen in 2 to 3 years, especially these days with all that we've had. We've gone through quantitative easing, which took rates to zero. Now we're going through quantitative tightening, with the Fed is trying to drain their balance sheet, their $4 trillion in debt. They're trying to, wean off of that debt by $50 billion a month. And that's acting like every time there's three of those, every 3 months when they've taken out $150 billion out of the off their balance sheet, it's the same as almost another quarter point rate hike. So there's this Jeff Gundlach brought that to light in one of his interviews recently, that, we've actually seen the Fed tighten a lot more than just raising the Fed funds, because when they're pulling money out of the system, it has the same effect as raising interest rates.
Okay, so let's kind of finish off, talking about some of your aggressive, growth-oriented ideas, like some of the tech stocks that that you have in your other newsletters.
Well, I tend to be fairly conservative and big picture stuff there. I'm looking for, you know, companies that are leaders in big data. For 2019, you know, big data is important. Cloud computing is important. 5G is very important. Anything that has to really do with e-mobile commerce. So, you know, that brings to light, we've been trading in and out of things like PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, and also things where there's, just, you know, 5G, for instance, you know, that would be things like Intel is going to be a big player there. And we really haven't done a whole lot with a lot of other, too many whiz-bang, what I call the whiz-bang stocks. You know, they went up fast and they come down fast. And therefore, you know, I like Salesforce, for instance. That's been another name we've worked with in the past. But recently, I've gotten rather small on the way up here in this rally here. I love Microsoft. That's I think the stock is going to continue to carry higher. The for what I'm looking at right now, I just bought into Dell. Dell just went public here in the middle of December. They just surpassed HP as the largest server company in the world, and within every data center out there, Jack, are, you know, stacks and stacks and stacks of big whopping servers. And so Dell is a big player there, and they're using Intel chips, you know, to install on all their servers. So cloud has a compound annual growth rate of, you know, almost 20% a year going forward for the next, you know, 5-6 years as far as they're predicting out. And so I think, you know, Dell is now, they're not controlling VMware, but they also have a large stake in VMware. And so, therefore, you also get that cloud play on VMware as well. So Dell at 43, it came out the gate hot. It started at 44, ran up to 49. It's pulled back to 43. I think it's a good place for people to establish a position there. It only trades at 6x earnings. And so I love that, the fact that it's trading at such a cheap PE. So I'm trying to find, you know, good stocks trading at low PEs right now that are in the tech space, that are institutional darlings, that aren't going to get hurt bad if the market pulls back. Because anything that ran up here recently with this recent, you know, snapback rally can pull back just as quickly. And I want to be careful not to buy into a market that's, you know, rallied 10% in 3 weeks, because that's a good way to get hurt if the market decides to retest. But if you're holding stocks in a trading at 6-7x earnings, I think that's pretty nice. I also bought recently Ericsson. They're a big player in 5G connectivity, and it's around $8.50 for people that are looking for cheap stock with a big name.
Okay.
So those are.
Do you think is 5G going to be the big story for 2019?
Yeah, it's a big. This is their big rollout year, so there's going to be just a lot of business being done for those companies that are installing it. It's installed in some places. Like AT&T is advertising it. But they've, you know, the capacity is not nearly where it's going to be in the next 2 or 3 years. It's a big build out right now going in 5G. And so that's a good wave for people to invest in. It looks fairly agnostic, you know, from all the different risks around the world, whether it's geopolitical or commodity or, you know, Fed, you know, raising rates or lowering rates. It seems like 5G is a big rollout that is underinvested and underowned by a lot of investors at this point in time, because they really don't know where to go to get the pure plays in that.
And what is Intel doing in 5G?
Well, again, they're going into a lot of mobile chips right now. That's going to be, you know, where anything's going to go over a 5G wireless network is going to have these new Intel processors. Their next generation processor is going to be a 5G compatible chip, and that's going to be, I think, where this coming year is going to be another rollout year for what they're using as a for basically the next generation of laptop chips and all that kind of thing are all going to have 5G capacity. So I'm thinking that that's, you know, not a bad place to be. In addition, they there was a big shortage here of PC chips in the last quarter that they've been starting to make up that supply on that. So I think they're going to have a banner quarter here, and the stock again trades at less than 10x earnings. But for their 5G, and also they're going heavy into Whether it's driverless automobiles, and also, what's their next big thing here? Well, they got Internet of Things. That's the other one, IoT. So I'm trying to also, they're kind of playing to all these different markets, at the same time. And really, it's going to be making laptops and notebooks and PCs more 5G compatible than have been. Or they're actually not. Now it's going to be just another generation of new equipment coming out. So the next set of like Dell laptops, for 2020, will have, 5G capability, wireless 5G capability, and that's going to be Intel inside.
What's your target for the stock?
Intel, based on all this insider buying here, these guys usually don't buy for 3 or 4 points, Jack. I think the stock can probably trade up to 60 to 65. It's currently 48.5.
Okay. So you like Intel, Ericsson, and Dell. Those are your favorite tech stocks of the moment right now.
Microsoft.
Microsoft. Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
Microsoft is in there too. Other ones are tradable. I mean, you got to look at, we have traded, things like Adobe, Autodesk. There's some very impressive stories out there. Twilio, which you might have heard of. They do a lot of application software for developers, and it's exciting what's going on in the tech space. AI stocks, which are coming to light. Those stocks that trade that are, really the artificial intelligence guts, to a lot of companies that sell into the bigger companies. But again, they trade with, no earnings. It's all sales, and it's all, big picture stuff. So until the market gives me the all clear sign, I'm really trying to avoid the temptation of, jumping back into some of these faster names, Jack, because I just don't know if I've been at this for 35 years, and I've never not seen a market go to new highs off of a pure V bottom, okay? Other than maybe 1987 when we had the crash, because the dollar was allowed to free fall overnight, and that was turmoil. But this particular market now, you have some structural things going on, and you've got, a forecasting of slower growth. How much of that's been priced in? Nobody really knows. But again, the big picture for people to understand is the stock market is disappearing. There were 9,000 stocks about 20 years ago that traded on all the exchanges. Today, there's less than 3,600. There's just as many mutual funds and exchange-traded funds as there are stocks. Next, I think there's well over 6,000 mutual funds out there. ETFs, there's about 1,800 to 2,400, depending on which ones, domestic and foreign. So you have a lot of manipulation going on. But the point is, between mergers and acquisitions and stock buybacks, the market's literally disappearing. And at this rate, there won't be much of a stock market in 30 years from now.
Right. But do you think that it's going to actually start going in the other direction now? You have all these, tech companies coming up right now. I mean,
mean like the unicorns, like Airbnb and Lyft.
Exactly.
Problem is there, Jack. Is,
miniature
they've been
unicorns.
doing all this private financing behind the curtain. And they, I
Right.
wonder how much valuation is really left. For the shareholder that gets
Right.
in on the IPO. They're already coming at it with a market caps of $30-40 billion. They're not young companies, and that's the thing. You're not really not getting in on the ground floor. I know people that have not joined Uber because they don't feel like there's the upside is there from the equity standpoint, and from an officer standpoint, or strategic type of employee, not a driver, but people that are working in the front office. That's interesting. So that to me is almost a sucker bet, a little bit like, the back in the day, the Palm and others, companies that have been around a long time, and they come into the market and they're already pretty much fully valued. So I think we got to be careful of that. And the IPO calendar, for the most part, is a ghost town. Not like it used to be at all. There's very few companies that come to market that are really game changers, and most of that is still biotech and life sciences. There's a lot of interesting tech companies out there, but they're still, it's mainly conceptual as opposed to, wow, they really got this new, you know, gadget that's going to change the entire industry, you know, from what it is. I just don't see a whole lot of that I see. And I'm, you know, I'm as hopeful as everybody. The Ingenuity continues to pump out good companies that are life-changing. But I think we're finding out that, you know, there's a law of, you know, what do you call it, diminishing returns and all. And some of that can be said for social media and things like that, you know, in terms of what that's, the things that's, you know, evolved from these larger things that people thought would just get bigger and bigger and bigger, when in fact, you know, left unregulated, have caused a lot of problems for people from a privacy standpoint and things of that nature. So there's, you know, we're always looking for the next Google or something like that. And, you know, from what I can tell, making life easier for tech employees and developers, there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of developers around the world. Those companies that have good tools for them is really, those are the companies that I think are making, they're getting the most attention. And I bring up Twilio, T-W-L-O, as an example. That company's hitting a new all-time high this week. And it's hard to find companies that in the tech space that are hitting new all-time highs in this market. Veeva does the same thing, you know, except they do it for life sciences. They're great tool makers. Those are interesting stocks. They're high flyers. Workday is another one, WDAY. You know, they've changed the way, you know, the people work with HR and, you know, things of that nature. OKTA is another one that they do identity software because people are having major issues with that identity theft at the corporate level. So, you know, they're addressing these areas here which need to be addressed, and they're doing great business. And all these are on these, you know, software as a service model, you know, that subscription models that Adobe pretty much started going down that road when they, you know, retrofitted their company from, you know, just doing, you know, CD-ROM updates into a subscription model online. And so you've seen that with Autodesk and with Red Hat, and, you know, even Cisco Systems is doing that. They're transforming the company to go that route. So that's a model that's taken off. And any companies that are addressing, whether it's cybersecurity or identity theft at the corporate level, or bringing tools to the market for software developers around the world, I think is really where, if people want to put aggressive tech money to work, those are the companies to kind of place your bets with, as opposed to retail online companies and all that, because that there's very low barriers to entry to that kind of thing, whereas developing really great tools takes tremendous talent.
Okay, so Twilio, this is one of your recommendations in the tech newsletter?
It's one that I'm trading, yes. Yeah, okay. I'm out of it at the moment. I just took a profit on it here this last week. So I'm looking, I think the stock, it usually trades, you know, 90 to 100, but it's trying to break out above 100 here. I think you're going to have another banner quarter. They had a huge quarter last quarter, and the market's anticipating another big quarter here. But I think again, during the sell-off, it got down to like low 80s, you know, so it moves. And that's what I like about my service is I use a lot of technical analysis, and with the help of some artificial intelligence, you know, I'm able to structure some buy points, Jack, that are attractive instead of, you know, I don't want to chase anything in the market that's already up, you know, 10% in 3 weeks. Everything's pegged. And there's more downside risk than upside risk right now. And just on a very short-term basis. But, you know, the market's very short-term. So that one is one I like to trade, and I think that it's got a lot of institutional following. It's a super well-loved by the tech fund management world. And so that to me is last year was NVIDIA. You know, that was the big story, right? I mean, it was the number one thing that people couldn't get enough of, and now the stock is just flat on its face. So there's always something that rotates into, and these are the new names out there that I think. I think Twilio is one of the names out there. Again, I mentioned, you know, I'll give you,
So it's going to be like a trading vehicle for you for 2019?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, right, very much so. Yeah, yeah. And so that's one. And some people have been trading also, you know, things like Ring Central and, you know, again, Veeva Systems here. I like the Veeva Systems story because biotech is still, there's a lot of blue sky there.
Okay.
And so anything in the biotech world that brings the cost of bringing drugs to market a lot cheaper is fantastic.
What's the symbol on that one?
Victor, Eddie Victor.
Okay. And this is also one of these tool makers.
That's correct.
Okay.
Tool makers for the life sciences.
Tool makers for the life sciences. Tool makers for programs.
So that's
programs,
a good way to maybe do a wrap on that from the standpoint of Twilio. Mm-hmm. And Twilio's clients are Microsoft, Uber, everybody. You know, they all the big names use Twilio that are non life sciences. But then Veeva manages the pharmaceutical, healthcare, life sciences area. So those are two good stocks for people to trade in and out of. Very bullish charts too. You know, if people are looking at the charts, they don't get much more bullish than both of these names at this point here.
So anybody that wants to learn more about your newsletters, to sign up for a trial or anything you have, it's Brian Perry. That's Bryan, in case anybody needs to spell it, Bryan, perryinvesting.com. And you're going to be speaking at a couple of events coming up soon?
Yes, the World Money Show in Orlando, Florida. That's going to be February 7th, 8th, and 9th, and 10th that week of. So if you're cold and staying indoors and you're in part of the U.S. during the wintertime and want a really a fountain of information from a lot of investment pros, then Orlando's the place to be for the World Money Show. And that's coming up, again, just in about 3 weeks here.
Okay. Are you doing a workshop or you're speaking? What are you doing?
I'll be doing three workshops and a panel down there. So as those workshops, I get into the different services that we can do on another time, on another interview, Jack. But, you know, in terms of how to make money using option strategies, what I use are bull call spreads for one service, buying leaps and selling out of the money short-term covered calls, or one's called Quick Income Trader, which has got a fantastic track record of selling naked puts. I've been doing that and averaging better than 400% for total return in 2018 for just selling naked puts.
Wow.
On great stocks. And so that's where we're. And High Tech Trader is simply what we talked about, is to find trades that really, if we're looking for 22 business days, which is how many business days in the month that we have, trades that'll go about 3 to 4 weeks that can, you know, in these big cap tech names where we can look for 7 to 10% returns over the course of that period of time. And I also recommend an in-the-money call recommendation with each of those particular trades. So if people just want to trade options and they want more gusto or more risk, then they can do that too. And that's so I'm gonna get into all that down at the Money Show and talk about those types of things and just continue to bring up what looks good and what the market favors and identify those stocks that are under steady accumulation by long-term money, because we want to try to find the next Cisco Systems or whatever. You've really got to do a lot of due diligence and understand that, what really has, a long runway of uninterrupted growth, regardless, that's supposedly the larger world of cloud and big data and IoT, Internet of Things, and 5G can't do without. Those are long-term, multi-year mega trends. And there's always going to be companies that are going to be suppliers to that, that are going to be infrastructure components to those particular trends. And I think that's really where we want to try to, going to those types of shows is really important because you run into a lot of really good ideas down there I always come away with three or four brand new names that I never even heard of, and the stocks have already started to make a move. But smart money's out there looking at it and doing more. They're just dedicated toward one or two different fields, and they're finding these really great new companies that have come up with, solutions for making businesses operate more efficiently, whether at the factory level or at the human level, and doing it in a manner that is very profitable, to the company that brings that technology. So it's exciting.
Okay. Well, Brian, on that note, I want to thank you, and I look forward to speaking with you a few months from now after the Money Show.
Yeah, we'll see where these stocks are all trading, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Brian.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.